Welcome to the Influence and Inspire podcast, episode 7. And I'm delighted to say my guest today is Claude Hendrickson, project manager, Boys to Men BME Health Project, and someone I would call a serial volunteer, basically for all the work that Claude has done within his community, which is Chapel Town, Leeds. Welcome, Claude.
Guy, how are you doing, Ryan? Nice to speak to you again.
Yes, and you, definitely. How you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm sure the weather's not as good in Leeds as it is in London, but we had sun most of today.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, now we had bits of rain and clouds, so it wasn't great for us down here. All right, Claude. So, Claude, you were brought up in Chapel Town, Leeds, in the 1960s. I don't really want to give away your age, but it's important.
Cool. I'm cool with my age being given away.
So tell me what it was like growing up in Leeds at that time, especially around the Chapel Town area.
Like you said, I mean, Chapel Town, my mother came to the UK in 1958. I was born in 1960. Mm-hmm. So I'm of that first generation of kids that were born here quite soon after my mother came here anyway.
Yeah.
And being in the north of England, oh gosh, it was really like being in country. You know, when you go to the Caribbean and then places and you say some people live up in country and some people live in town.
Yeah.
Well, in England, the north of England was very much like the country of England. Mm-hmm. Very, very slow moving, very slow thinking people as a grouping of people.
Yeah.
And we was, as black people, slotted into that. Very manufacturing, very coal mines, working on farms, mm-hmm. working on in the industry, in furnaces, furnace foundries. It was very much like that. Very cold, dark, and miserable up north.
I think most of us in London, most of us in London have probably heard of Chapel Town, Leeds. So obviously Chapel Town's got a reputation, whether that's good or bad, I'm not sure, but I'm quite well aware of Chapel Town and the large black community in Chapel Town.
This is probably because of two things. One, because, you know, the argument is that Leeds started the first carnival in England. I know London says it started in 66, but actually London's was more a sound system on the street thing, whereas the Leeds one was more carnival costumes. And because, you know, the core of the group probably down in London were probably more from Jamaica, and the core of the black people up here were more from St. Kitts and Nevis.
Mm-hmm.
So it was very much about pants. So our carnival started in 67. London wants to say it started its carnival in 66, which is cool.
Yeah.
So yeah, and then we had the riots of 1975. Race riots with the police. So yeah, Chapel Town. Leeds has its notoriety, but Chapel Town does. It's a bit like Ladbroke Grove. It's a bit like Brixton.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bit like Highfields in Leicester. It's a bit like Handsworth in Birmingham, Moss Side in London, St. Paul's in Bristol. All of the big cities have got their predominantly black areas, mm-hmm. which actually, you know, kick-started the knowledge of them cities for black communities, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so, and how different would you say Chapel Town is today than it was then?
Chapel Town has always been historically an in-transit area. So, for example, before we got here, the Jewish people were very strong in our area, then the Irish mm-hmm. people, and then our parents came. Chapel Town is still an in-transit area. It's mm-hmm. an area where migrating people seem to always come and seem to always find space. So Chapel Town is changing, evolving. The sense of community, I think, amongst the black communities kind of been ebbed away by the movement of in-transit new people. So we've got lots of Africans settling here, but they're all from different regions of Africa. We've mm-hmm. got lots of Eastern Europeans settling here. lots of different Pakistani groups, or Muslim groups, Pakistanis, Sikhs, Hindus, so very in transit area.
And how do you feel these different groups are being welcomed now as opposed to in the 1960s, 70s?
I think they've all got their own agendas. They're all coming here for different reasons, you know. Some are running away from conflict, some are fleeing other reasons. The Eastern Europeans seem to be more migrants looking for work in principle rather than running away from somewhere. The African Caribbean community, I think, sometimes is losing a sense of its identity because there's so much going on around it that, and you know, the young people wanting to move out of the area, some wanting to stay in the area, some of the older people moved out of the area. It's a bit like how Brixton, I feel walking around Chapel Town sometimes the same way as I feel now walking around Brixton.
Okay.
I've been coming to Brixton since 1977. And it feels the same. It feels a bit the same in Ladbroke Grove. It feels a bit the same in Handsworth. Kind of, you know, somewhere where you've grown up and spent your childhood, and you kind of walk in the streets sometimes and you think, well, bloody hell, I don't know anybody.
Yes, I know what you mean.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you've grown up through all of these changes in Chapel Town and in Leeds generally, and you've been a part of things like the Palace Youth Project and a Chapel Town Young People's 10 to 2 Club. What made you start getting interest in volunteering?
To tell you the truth, I think we started off in sound systems and and I think it goes a bit back. Funnily enough, for me, where I lived in the area where I lived, they used to have these young socialist people that used to go to these, you know, like young socialists go to Blackpool and them seaside selling, doing young socialists. And as young kids, we used to ride with them. So I suppose that was my kind of first introduction, you know, giving out leaflets at young socialist events when I was small. And then the Black Power movement within our communities kind of started late 70s, and just hanging and hanging around them and helping out at things. And then we started in the sound systems, and sound systems was kind of like a voluntary thing in its own right, because a lot of the time we didn't get paid very much for playing out, but it was just a chance to do something as young people for ourselves.
Okay.
So they're the kind of places I kind of first got into it. And then obviously at 15, I got involved in the race riot and was the youngest person to be arrested for the race riots of 75 bonfire night. So that introduced me to people like Darkus Howe. I met Darkus Howe when I was about 15. And he had a massive influence on my whole life, you know. Him and Rudy Narayan and Mr. Griffiths, barristers, and that came from London there, you know. And so yeah, especially with Darkus, he kind of said that, you know, we as young people had a responsibility to our community. So that's where it kind of kick-started for me.
Yeah. No, that's good. That's good. So tell me about the Community Self-Build Project.
The Community Self-Build Project, I did that back in about 1989.
Oh,
what it was, the community was changing, and back then we had a lot of derelict properties around the area that the black people lived in. There seemed to be lots of derelict properties. So the councils or the housing associations started to come in and said they were going to build houses for us, because black people, one of our number one issues was housing. And they said they would give employment to local people. And what happened is these housing associations started building these houses, and I started to notice that none of the building sites had any black guys on them. But what I'd also noticed is that many of our fathers and stepfathers had come from the Caribbean, but they had trade skills. But they still were not getting jobs on these building sites. So it became a little bit of a challenge, and I suppose I'm a go against the grain kind of person. And I wanted to ask the question, why are we not being given opportunities to get jobs on these building sites? Anyway, I then went on to watch a program on TV about a self-built group in Bristol called Zanzili, which was a group of black men in Bristol that were had just completed building a small block of 12 flats.
So I
pursued that, and some funding was made available for me to do a bit of a feasibility study. So I got a group of black guys together, all of us aged between about 18 and 28 at the time. We went to Bristol, visited that project, and we went for it. You know, we created a housing association. It took us 6.5 years jumping over hurdles and everything to get the project on site. And in that time, visiting projects that they were trying to do. I think there's been one quite near Peckham as well, a self-build that I used to come and visit. There's been quite a few, especially in the south of England. And so we went for it, and we managed to secure the funding. A group of 12 guys built their own houses, 92,000 bricks, 52,000 blocks. And this year makes 21 years since they finished them houses, and they've been living in them 21 years.
So I
really wanted to prove that a group of black men working together could achieve something to the benefit of themselves and give them the skills that would get them employment.
And I suppose also that gave them a pride in what they've actually built. And so I suppose they've looked after that house more than they've looked after most things.
Yeah, it did. It gave them a sense of being, you know, because how many people in Britain, and one of the things I realized is that in coming from the, our parents coming from the Caribbean and even our African brothers, being involved in your own, built, having some in your own house back home is the norm. You get what I'm saying? Whereas in Britain, I found that when our parents came, they were told to wait in a line till they gave us a house, you know, and you know, there was a massive opportunity there. So yeah, we took it on, and I wanted also to prove that we could achieve something, because back then, like in 89, 90, they were talking about how black boys were lazy, we didn't want to work, blah 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 blah, and it was an opportunity to prove them wrong.
Okay. You're also involved in the Black Health Initiative. What was the main aim of this initiative?
No, we have an organization up here called the Black Health Initiative,
right,
which originally was set up around, it's funny enough, it used to be called BCAT, the Black Health, something to do with AIDS and health. When you know, back in the day when they were talking about black people had AIDS and everything. So, but then out of that, they created the Black Health Initiative, which is an organization which fundamentally was looking at women and breast cancer and how they could engage more women. And I think it's 2011, I was invited to a women's breast cancer event. And from there, I realized that actually black men, you know, we're a law unto ourselves. We're very much like ostriches. We've got our heads stuck in the sand when it comes to health. So they asked me if I would become this black men's health champion. And that is basically going out into the community and basically trying to get men talking about health and raising the profile. So we did that. We put a little group together, and then I joined a group called the Leeds Men's Health Network. I then became the chair of Leeds Men's Health Network. And it's very much about getting men per se to take some responsibility for their health. You know, there's been lots of findings. So one of the findings for me, which was kind of quite shocking, was that between the age of 18 to 32, men kind of go missing from the health system. You know, unless they get into a fight or something and end up at A&E. But between 18 and 32, not many men go to see their GP. So I've been actively, as part of the other stuff I do, trying to raise the profile about with black men and health. We just got some funding to do this Boys to Men project, where I'm working with African and African Caribbean men. I'm working with the Sikh men, and I'm working with the Pakistani Muslim men and African Muslim men to host a series of events, some MOT workshops, some healthy walking, some discussions around traditional remedies. Mm-hmm. I'm going to hopefully get the different groups of men to cook for each other, so we can talk about what we actually eat. Mm-hmm. We're going to have a session with GPs, where GPs are going to be able to come in and speak to black men as a group and ask them what could they do more to get black men to more engage with NHS.
Yeah.
We're going to have discussions around mental health and the impact of mental health on black men with these three groups. We're going to have discussions and talk about bereavement and how black men handle, black and Asian men handle mm-hmm. bereavement and stuff like that.
Okay. Sounds very interesting. And that's your current role that you're in at the moment, isn't
it? Yeah, that's the role I just had a role for 3 years where mm-hmm. I had a project which was called the Race Card Project, which I was looking at. After 20 years of working with young people, I decided to take a break, especially when I got into this health business and I had a young brother who was 45 that died of stomach cancer, and it kind of just pushed me more into this health stuff. Mm-hmm. But I also decided to do this project called Race Card, which I wanted to take some time out of Chapel Town because I spent all my life here. Yeah. I mean, I travel all around London, Birmingham. I travel in North London, South London, East London, mm-hmm. all over London. But I wanted to look at the three core black communities up here. So I looked at... the black community of Chapel Town and how far we'd come in the last 50 years. I looked at the black community in Huddersfield, how far they've come in the last 50 years. Mm-hmm. I looked at the black community of Bradford, how far they've come in the last 50 years. I also was looking at another city we've got up here called Wakefield to see how far they'd come. Yeah. And it's a bit like saying, in a fashion, it was a bit like saying, looking at Peckham mm-hmm. and the south of London, how far they've come, and then going over to the east and looking at Dalston mm-hmm. and how far Dalston had come, and then maybe going over to the other side, like Paddington mm-hmm. and Ladbroke Grove and Carlsden, and look how far, you know, it was like looking at them three groupings and mm-hmm. how far organizations within them communities had come. You know, but we looked at a number of themes. We looked at how far they'd come in regards of the media.
Yeah.
So, you know, and how, you know, what was the relationship with them black communities with the media? We looked at what was their relationship with education and training, and how far had they come? Because we still had a situation where black boys were still being disproportionately excluded. So I wanted to look at the other cities and look at how they tackled them.
Yeah.
We also looked at how far the community had come as regards the police and policing. And then the final one we looked at was how far the community had come around health and well-being. So that's looking at social care for the elderly, looking at youth provision, looking at nursery places and stuff like that. So mm-hmm. I looked at them four themes across the four cities.
Yeah. And in which city would you say they were the most advanced in all four of those themes?
Well, I would say Leeds is a bigger city.
Mm-hmm.
And Bradford has a town that's become a city, and Huddersfield's a bit the same. So up here, Leeds is seen more people will know of Leeds than they'll probably know of Huddersfield and Bradford.
Yeah.
So I think... Leeds is the leader. Leeds is quite a bigger city in comparison. The black communities were made up different. So, for example, one of the things I found out were that the majority of black people that came to Leeds in the 60s mm-hmm. were actually, the biggest denomination came from St. Kitts and Nevis.
Okay.
And the second biggest denomination of black people in Leeds came from Jamaica.
Right.
In Huddersfield, I found the biggest denomination of black people that were settled in Huddersfield came from Grenada and Carrickou.
Mm.
And the second biggest denomination was Jamaica. I found in Bradford, the biggest denomination of black people that were in Bradford actually came from Dominica.
Okay.
And the second biggest number were from Jamaica. So across Yorkshire, the biggest number of black people are Jamaicans, but in the relevant cities, they're not the biggest denomination of black people. Mm. And so then you realize that islandism has played a big part in, you know, sometimes we ask why black communities are not together, and it made you realize that islandism, because they came from different islands, then that was part of the reason why initially they never got together, and that's never really been tackled by the black community in Britain. Well, I don't think in the north of England it has. I don't know if it has in the south.
No, I'd probably say it hasn't, to be quite honest. although I'm not sure, because in the south you're a bit, it's a bit more mixed. I'm not sure if there's these dividing lines between these different West Indian countries.
Well, one of the things I found out about London, looking at London from afar, that a lot of the high-flying kind of individuals that have made it, the Trevor McDonalds and certain of the other Baroness this and this and that, and you know, Trevor Phillips and different people, when you look at the names that come out of London, you know, like take Darkus Howe. You know, I think Darkus Howe was Trinidadian.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So when you look at the individuals that have kind of graduated through London, quite a few of them seem to come from some of the smaller islands to Jamaica, whether they're from Barbados, from Trinidad, from Grenada, from Guyana, you know. So And so that's part of it as well. When you when you're doing some research into them, actual so-called inadverted common icons or people that are well known across Britain, if you look into their where they originated from, you assume first off that they're all from Jamaica. Just like the system assumes that all black people are from Jamaica. But then when you go a bit under the skin, you find, oh, some are from St. Lucia, some are from here, some are from here. So, yeah, so that's been quite interesting.
Okay. You also work with the Black Training Enterprise Group, BTEC, on the Route to Success Role Models program. And yes, I've got another member of BTEC on my show. I promise they're not my sponsors, by the way, although they probably should be. I'll probably have a word with Bola after this. tell me a bit more about Routes to Success and the actual program and how that works, because I understand it's a three-year program.
Well, it was a three-year program. I know Jeremy for about 20 years, and I'd heard that he was doing this Black Role Model project, because one of the things I've heard in the system they keep throwing out is that the black community, there's not enough black male role models in the black community, and this is why the kids are running amok and blah, blah, blah. So I heard about Jeremy's project, got in touch with him. He got 3 years funding. Initially, it was really to do work in the south of England. But I know he's made links into Manchester. He's made links into Birmingham. He's got role models from quite a few different cities. So I hooked up with him, and he asked me if I wanted to come on the role model project. And I says, yeah, I did. So I joined up and became one of the role models, and then actually wanted to set up a branch of the BTEG Roots to Success kind of blueprint in the north of England. So we received some funding to get a number of guys, again, from the three cities. So three from Bradford, three from Huddersfield, three from Leeds, one from Wakefield. You know, the cities that I'd been working in, because I'd met some good guys. To try and get them trained up to become role models. And it's been quite interesting. They haven't managed, you know, they did a really good job with the 3 years, but they haven't managed to get enough money to do anything more in the north of England. So I'm in the process of trying to raise some money. A fantastic project. I mean, it's been quite interesting for me, because I've been down to quite a few sessions in schools with the guys in London, and it's quite different, you know, the approach, and in London it seems they seem to be more active, but a fantastic project, and I'd advise any guys out there that are upwardly mobile. It's a good network, it's a good way to speak to men who have actually achieved things in their life, and it's inspiring, because sometimes you're out there, you think you're out there on your own, but it's good to speak to other men like Bolo and some of the others, and Dee Dee, and I've met some really good guys, and you know, we've got a we've got a WhatsApp network and everything. So, yeah.
No, good stuff, good stuff. You also, I've been trailing YouTube, and I know you've got a couple of YouTube videos on there. So just tell us a bit about the YouTube videos that you've got at the moment and what they're actually about.
Okay, I've got, there's probably three of them that I'd really talk about. I've got one which is about making a difference with your life, which is a video more or less about my life when I started out, how I got into trouble at 15 with the race riots, how I met Darkus Howe, how I went to prison at 16 through some of the biggest prisons in England, up this side, Armley Prison, Strangeways Prison, Durham Prison. Came out, never been back in trouble like that again, but turned my life around and done all the projects that I've done, which I'd like to believe, you know, I've been driven to make sure my children, at least, you know, I always say to my children, it's not about whether they like me, it's about whether they respect what I've achieved and what I've tried to do with my life. So, yes, so that's one video. There's another video which is about talking about health and impact on disadvantaged communities and how places like, you know, deprived communities suffer, you know, due to health issues that can lead to mental health and that. And I'm doing and then the third one I've got there is about the self-build project, which we received money from the Red Nose, from charity projects to employ our site foreman on the self-build. So it's just a story of the group that built their own houses.
Okay, excellent. Is there anything else in... any other initiatives happening in Leeds that you'd want listeners to be aware of?
Other than we're celebrating 50 years of Carnival, I'm an active member.
Why not?
I'm an active member of our local community, so I've been involved in local community radio for about the last 25 years.
Yeah.
Because I think, you know, community radio or radio, you know, that deals with our issues is still lacking, especially in the north of England, because everything in the north of England is like 5 years behind what's happening in London. So, so I'm involved in that. Like I said, I'm actively involved in the health work and trying to develop some male networks up here that I can dovetail into. You know, I'd like to bring some guys down to an event where they could meet some of you London guys. So I'm still working on that. I still come down to London regularly. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks, Claude, for your time today. Have you got any social media you'd like?
Yes, I have. Obviously, my email is claude@lwicct.co.uk. That's my work number. That's claude@lwicct.co.uk. And I've got a hopperuk@me.com. That's hopper, hopperuk@me.com. And I have a Facebook page called Hopper Hendrickson.
Okay.
Excellent. And I have a Twitter angle, Claude Hopper. And I have a race card Facebook page.
Oh, wow. You're doing well with the social media. I'm impressed. All right. So
One of the things I did when I was looking at the 50 years, and I'll finish with this. One of the things I did, because I opened the first in London, when you was getting 200-seat internet cafe being opened in Victoria and on Tottenham Court Road, I opened the first internet cafe access point in Leeds up here. So yeah, so one of the, when I did the research, I was looking at how black people are using the social media footprint and how we're developing it.
Yeah,
I'm a bit disappointed because they seem to be using it more for silly things more than positive things, but I think there's still hope.
Yeah, that's something we have to change.
So I'm very interested in people developing social media footprints.
Yeah,
on that note.
Okay, well, thanks for your time. I'll put all of your details on the show notes. But thanks for your time. I'll also add your links to your YouTube videos as well.
Okay.
All right, well, thanks for your time.
And send me the links and I can step in, yeah?
Yeah.
And thank you for the time. It's always welcome to have somebody from London take the time out to, you know, linking with us up in the north, because sometimes I think, you know, we're living in a country which is very north-south divide.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a lot more you London guys could do to help some of us guys up here. So thanks for the time.
Okay. We'll try not to forget you. Thanks.
Okay. All right. Thank you.